From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 1 week ago today, November 13th, when Amazon revealed the winning city in the national competition for its new HQ2. Amazon originally intended to choose just one city, or so it said, home for 50,000 workers, but last week Amazon announced that it had decided to choose two cities and split the jobs about 25,000 apiece. One of the cities is Crystal City in Arlington, Virginia. The other location is Queens, New York City. Already there's a national debate about whether the so-called winning cities overpaid. The tabloids have mocked New York State for offering to pay for a new helipad for CEO Jeff Bezos to allow Bezos to avoid New York City traffic. But the real beef is with the massive tax incentives. Derek Thompson, writing for the Atlantic Monthly, argues that the entire episode should be against the law. He writes, quote, "Why the hell are U.S. cities spending tens of billions of dollars to steal jobs from one another in the first place? Every year, American cities and states spend up to $90 billion in tax breaks and cash grants to urge companies to move among states." End quote. That kind of criticism has echoed off the streets of Queens and Arlington, where city councils have complained that they were shut out of the process, and some neighborhood groups have come together to oppose the Amazon arrival. But Governor Andrew Cuomo shot back at critics yesterday with a new op-ed defending the Amazon deal. He says that critics of government incentives are either extreme conservatives or socialists, and he says that he wishes we lived in a world that didn't require big government giveaways to corporate giants, but Cuomo says we don't. It's reality. He says, play the game or get beat. This hour, a conversation about whether that's true or if that's a false choice. A lot to digest here. Our guests include Kent Gardner, chief economist at the Center for Governmental Research and opinion editor for the new Rochester Beacon. Kent, welcome back to the program.
Nice to be here, Evan.
And also with us is David K. Johnston, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist and editor of DC Report. And David, welcome back to you.
Glad to be here.
Well, you've written a little bit about tax incentives over the years. So the governor says that it's just extremists who don't get it. And he says he has some sympathy for the idealism of the argument. But in the end, this is the game and either you play or you get beat. Yes or no?
Well, I have some sympathy for the argument that you play or you get beat because our Supreme Court's decisions in these matters have not been friendly to taxpayers. And there's a problem with the interpretation of what's called the Commerce Clause and the unwritten dormant Commerce Clause, the implication of that clause, that allow corporations, big ones that can promise a lot of jobs, whether or not they deliver, to whipsaw taxpayers. That said, we should ask ourselves, do we live in a society of corporate socialism or do we live in competitive capitalist markets? This deal is classic corporate socialism in which gains are privatized and losses are socialized.
Well, I read the Rochester Beacon, so if you don't mind, I'm going to quote from you first, Kent, and then I'll ask you to expand on that.
Okay.
And in so doing, reading about these sort of corporate incentives for the big scales, I've been reading about what's happening not just with Amazon, but what's happening in a lot of places. I read about the Kansas-Missouri border war, where companies, you got KCK and you got KC, Missouri, and back and forth they go. The state of Kansas offers incentives, and so the headquarters of Applebee's goes across the border, and then the other state says, well, we're going to steal yours across the border. Back and forth they go, moving 3 or 4 miles at a time, lowering their own tax burdens, just moving over state lines. And, you know, again, Andrew Cuomo would say, we wish that weren't the case, but that's the world. Well, here's Kent, writing of the Rochester Beacon this week. Quote, dangling cash and credits before prospective new firms has been established practice in economic development circles for decades. I'd wager that a strong majority of states would love to end financial incentives and compete on fundamentals instead, things like labor quality and cost, physical and educational infrastructure, and location. Until that day comes, we're stuck assuming that if New York's offering to Amazon didn't close the deal, the absence of the financial incentives would have taken New York off the list, end quote. Do you buy that? Amazon's really not coming to New York without a deal.
You know, this is a case, you know, I think if we back up and we look at many of these corporate welfare deals and many of these incentives, I think many of them would have occurred without the incentive. You know, it's often, I think I led, you know, my piece there talking about a situation in which an economic development official conspired with a local business owner to say, gee, if you threaten to leave town, we can extract money from the state to replace the sewage treatment plant. And that's exactly what happened. And it was an entirely a subterfuge. And many times, if you've got there's a really obvious reason for a company to locate in a specific place, and then they go to the local public officials and they say, "Gee, you know, I'm got all these other candidates out there. There are 20 other sites that could work for me, and you know, if you don't pony up, I'm going to go to one of the others." I don't think that was this case. I mean, there are lots and lots of places that could have accommodated Amazon. Frankly, Rochester could have accommodated Amazon because Amazon kind of brings its own thing. And you don't have to go to a place where there are technology workers if you're Amazon. You go to that place and technology workers will come to you. So I do think this one is a case in which the incentives probably were necessary. It's a lousy game and we shouldn't be playing it.
I want to return to this question because the central core as we go throughout this hour is, if it's a lousy game and we shouldn't be playing it, how do we change the game? Does it take new federal law? Does it take, you know, bold states to say, I'm going to sit out even if I get, I don't know. And our guests are going to have some insight there. Before we get there, though, let me read a little bit of what Governor Cuomo said in his op-ed, because I know before the program began, David had some strong reactions to that. The governor is trying to make the case that nobody is giving Amazon anything. And, he wants to make the claim that it's actually Amazon giving New York a deal. So this is part of what he wrote yesterday in his op-ed about Amazon. Quote, "The socialists argue that we gave a $1 billion grant to one of the richest men in the country and that we should have given that money to the poor and the needy. It is a politically appealing argument, but also it is once again wrong. We give Amazon nothing, and their revenues give us approximately $900 million annually. If Amazon does not employ 25,000 New Yorkers, we lose $900 million, end quote. That's the governor's construction. Do you buy that?
Well, let's see if there are 25,000 jobs. But the governor, first of all, starts off with this false premise that you or I or other people say, gee, let's give this money to the poor. I don't seem to be making that argument at all. The question is, if it's a sound investment, the market will finance it. If it's not a sound investment, why are we subsidizing it? And if it is a sound investment, why in the world are we subsidizing it? And why don't we do these deals on a different footing? Okay, you want $1 billion of subsidy. We'd like $1 billion of passive capital investment in your company. And when you've paid us back our $1 billion plus the time value of the money, interest, then you can go on your merry way and we're all happier. But why should you and I be forced to give money to the company led by literally the richest man in the world, Jeff Bezos? I mean, that's just absurd. We've always had welfare laws. The Old Testament is full of welfare laws. Hammurabi's Code has welfare in it for those people who need help, the disabled, the orphaned, the widowed.
Okay, on that scale, though, because the governor addresses that.
Yeah.
He says that it's the social, and I like how he reduces all the critics to either extreme conservatives
right.
or socialists,
right.
Which, of course, is ridiculous. But when he says that there is an idealistic argument that he's heard coming from the political left or from some of the critics that we ought to just give money to the poor and the needy. So, but he says that's wrong, that you can't just do that. Do you agree with him there?
Well, I'm not advocating or arguing. I don't think most people are that we should take this amount of money and go give it to the poor. We want to invest in our society. We want to use our tax dollars to build a better economy, and we want to have laws that make corporations do things that grow the economy, which we currently don't do. We favor risk-averse managers of companies who hold on to cash rather than investing in paying out money. He's setting up a false premise here. If we want to have taxpayers put the money into corporations, then let's just own up to it and say, hey, we don't believe in capitalism anymore. We don't believe in competitive markets. We believe in corporate socialism. We're the country that's for corporate socialism, because that's really what this is. And it's a reasonable choice to make. You can agree, like it or dislike it. I don't happen to like it. But let's be honest about what we're doing here.
Call it what it is.
Yeah.
Call it what it is. All right, Kent, is that what it is?
Well, let me back up a bit. I mean, philosophically, I agree with David. The challenge is that, you know, the choice we have on the ground doesn't allow that as an option, right?
Yep.
And the choice we have on the ground and the challenge that all these deals confront is what would happen in the absence of this particular industrial siting. And, you know, that's not an easy question. You know, talking about a false premise, I mean, that's where the governor starts there. He says, well, in the absence of us offering this incentive to Amazon, nothing else is going to happen. And we're going to continue to see this particular parcel vacant. We're not going to see a growth in jobs, all that sort of thing. And he said he's making the assumption that that but for this investment of Amazon in this community, building this new headquarters in this community, that those jobs will not materialize. And, you know, again, there's going to be some truth to that and some falsity to that. And we honestly don't know. You know, that's why I think about this as a great big game of poker. The industrial development authorities are sitting across the table from somebody like Jeff Bezos. And, you know, he says, you know, I'm going to bring you 25,000 jobs. And if you give me an incentive, if you don't give me the incentive, I'm going to go someplace else. And the difference will be 25,000 jobs plus all of the service jobs that might be associated with this particular siting and all of those spillover jobs, which are real. You know, if inflated by the governor's press release, but that's really the question: what would happen instead? And we don't honestly know that.
That's what your piece keys in on, that phrase. But for this incentive, we don't get the jobs, we don't get the spillover effect, we don't get any multiplier effect. And they always make that claim.
And Evan, not only is that a valid argument, but there's other spillover effects. Locating in Long Island City on the edge of it's a Queens just before you leave the city of New York is going to require some massive new public investments that are in fact badly needed in New York City. New York City's subway system is over 100 years old. It can't handle the kind of workforce that they're planning. So we're going to have to see new investments in that. It's going to lead to some redevelopment of housing and greater density, which is in the long run a good thing. And it will help New York City and New York State be less dependent on Wall Street finance for government revenues. So, I mean, there are solid arguments in favor of this. And imagine our discussion would be if this was going instead to New Jersey, since we're New Yorkers.
And if I can build on that, David, I've been looking. We just are starting in a couple of weeks an engagement in Wisconsin around the Foxconn expansion in suburban Racine. Well, Racine County, you know, there are a couple of things. We should get to the structure of the deal, too. The Amazon deal is performance-based, that the company gets a tax credit against their actual performance in terms of job creation.
A tax credit they can sell to somebody else if they can't use it.
Granted, yeah, and it's, but still, it is still performance based.
Yes,
the Foxconn deal is kind of horrible.
Oh, the Foxconn deal is a classic example of how not to do this, and it includes letting them pollute left and right. They're not going to create anywhere near the number of jobs.
Can I just jump in? Because for our listeners who aren't as familiar with Foxconn, can I just read a quick synopsis?
Yeah, yeah.
This is from the Atlantic Monthly. If you're not familiar, the saga of Wisconsin and a Chinese manufacturing giant named Foxconn started several years ago with Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker luring Foxconn with a subsidy plan totaling more than $3 billion. You know, the Atlantic snarkly points out that for the same amount, you could have given every household in Wisconsin about $1,700. I'm not sure those.
Gives you a measure.
It's a lot of money.
Now, Foxconn said it would build a large manufacturing plant that would create 13,000 jobs near Racine. But now, at least in recent reports, it seems the company is building a much smaller factory with just one quarter of the initial promised investment. And much of the assembly work may, in fact, be done by robots.
And they may also import workers from China to the U.S. to do many of the jobs.
Well, you've got a below 3% unemployment rate. You know, yeah. This is not it's the other issue is that you're creating a demand for jobs in a place that doesn't have a surplus. But the other point I want to make before we get away from this is that the
doesn't
Fox
have a shortage. I mean, of jobs.
Sorry. Yeah, thank you. The is that in suburban Racine, they've got plenty of infrastructure. Much of the Foxconn deal, I mean, nearly $1 billion of the Foxconn money is going into building infrastructure that will only be needed if you get this massive manufacturing plant. Unlike Long Island City, as David was saying, where, you know, I would think that a lot of the people who live in that part of Queens, their first reaction was to say, oh, no, this is terrible. You know, the metro is already jammed. This line can't have any more people. If they thought about it for very long, they'd say, oh, this isn't so bad. So long as I put up with the chaos in another 10 years, we have to have better service because they can't possibly accommodate Amazon in this location.
There is one other aspect of the Foxconn deal that we've written about at DC Report. They have gotten from the Trump administration and the Walker administration in Wisconsin exemption from the clean water laws that have been critical to lowering many kinds of diseases, including cancer. The pollutants, and they don't even have to tell us what they are, but they're when you are engaged in the manufacturing of the kind that Foxconn does, you're dealing with all sorts of heavy metals and complex chemical compounds. They're going to be free to dump those into Lake Michigan, and well, we'll all be gone before that water gets to Rochester and people are drinking it. It'll come here eventually.
Yeah, the Foxconn deal is just bad on so many
every
different levels.
Every you can imagine, yeah.
But is the Atlantic reporting, from what you understand, Ken, in your research, accurate in which they say that despite Foxconn building a smaller size facility, having robots potentially doing some of the promised 13,000 jobs, that the total state investment's now about $4 billion, and they could end up, according to the Atlantic, paying more than $500,000 per net new job in this deal?
Sure, it's possible. I mean, the math works. And we honestly don't know what the employment's going to be. We do know that manufacturing is becoming more and more capital intensive every year that goes by. That's why when people, sing Praise Hallelujah because we've got manufacturing jobs coming back to the United States. Well, we got manufacturing plants coming back to the United States. But it doesn't mean that they actually employ very many people.
And by the way, some of the deals, we've done one here in New York where the hereditary ruler of Abu Dhabi building a plant in to make chips for computers down at Saratoga Springs. I think the subsidy there works out to approximately $1 million per job. It will never pay for itself in that sense. The argument for that one, which the governor also supported, was not that the man who owns a country needs our money. It was it will lead to all these other investments of related companies. And if it does, then perhaps it's a reasonable investment. But let's not forget that the New York State Constitution, adopted 2-1 in the 1840s, adopted in the 1870s 2-1, adopted in 1937 2-1, and kept 2-1 50 years ago, has an absolute 100% you may not give state money to corporations, which we get around by this cockamamie 2011 decision by our highest state court that, yes, the state of New York and the legislature and the governor may not give money to corporations. They can't give them credit. They can't give them cash. But if they give the money to an economic development agency, it can do it. As I've said in the past, drug dealers should pay attention to this kind of legal reasoning. As long as you finance the deals and don't touch the drugs, apparently you're okay.
Boy. So, but I want to spend our second half hour working through some of the feedback of our listeners and asking the question, we don't like this game, and even the governor himself has said he didn't like the game, is the game truly unchangeable? Or is it not? Is that a cop-out? And are there, sort of viable solutions in front of us? What do they look like? We'll get to that. And listeners, if you want to call the program as we talk about Amazon and this entire 13-month saga, of which Rochester briefly fancied itself on the list of possible Amazon locations. Amazon made the daring and totally out-of-the-box choice of New York City and Washington. Who would have thought? But you can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Our guests are David K. Johnston, investigative journalist, Pulitzer Prize winner and editor of DC Report, and Kent Gardner, chief economist at the Center for Governmental Research and opinion editor for the Rochester Beacon. Journalist David Dayen wrote about something that I want to touch on one more point before we get back to changing the system. And Dayen wrote this about the Amazon sweepstakes, which he called crass from the beginning. He writes, quote, "The biggest suckers on HQ2 aren't New York and Virginia. It's the other 236 cities that bid on a headquarters they were never going to get. Those bids didn't just include the size of the bribe. They included a wealth of important data about plans for transportation, housing, education, and workforce development. Amazon now has a treasure trove of non-public information about America's very future, in addition to knowing how much cash cities are willing to part with to land a future Amazon facility. And it got all that, along with a giant PR benefit, from the bidding war for free. If you knew a city was going to build a road in a particular place, you could make a lot of money buying up the real estate there. Imagine that on a national scale, and you can see how Amazon will grow far wealthier from the data it collected than even the raw dollars extracted from HQ2's big winners. In fact, this was the real reason Amazon orchestrated the whole charade, end quote. Agree or disagree?
Oh my, that reaches a level of cynicism I'm not quite ready to hit.
Me too.
Really? Because it seems pretty logical. Is it not logical?
That's not what drove what they
did. If they had chosen Rochester or Omaha or something unexpected, they chose New York City and Washington. They could have chosen that in 5 minutes on the first day.
Well, no question about that. And, you know, whether they... And I guess, you know, you have to ask whether those of us who didn't have a snowball's chance in hell should have spent the kind of money and time and effort we did putting together a bid, you know. But that's the other piece, incidentally, in terms of the cost. How many man hours of pretty expensive people were devoted to putting together those bids? How many of them hired, apparently some of them hired McKinsey at their nosebleed rates to help them put together a bid? So there's an awful lot of money put in to just prepare those bids. I don't know. They did do a two-stage bid. Give them credit for that. You know, this is the qualifying bid, and then we're going to sift it down to 20. I don't kind of reach that.
You don't think that was the purpose of this game?
No, I don't think it was a purpose.
Okay. It's a result of it, but it's not the purpose.
Okay, but it's a result.
And there may be someone in Amazon who decides to capitalize on it, right?
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Sell this information to folks who do corporate site location work. But the other thing I would suggest is that I don't think most of that stuff was secret.
Okay, so
I don't think there's a whole lot of secret information.
All right,
because they're out there doing those pitches all the time.
Okay, so fair enough. And even if we agree that that wasn't the purpose of the charade, I want to at least ask, David, you have written so often about the inequality in the game itself, that if we want to be a free market, we're not a free market, that the Walmarts of the world have never been on the same playing field as the small stores that they regularly run roughshod over in these communities that pave the way, and then all of a sudden they go, where'd our small businesses go? This is another example of a large company getting the benefit, even if that wasn't the intention. They have all kinds of advantages. They've got advantages in resource and lawyers and cash and now data, don't they?
Well, fundamental economic theory tells you that there's a problem you have to address constantly in capitalism, which is you have 100 firms start out in some enterprise. The weakest ones fold. The ones that have poor management decisions, things go badly, they're undercapitalized, they fold. And you move towards monopoly. That's why we have what we call antitrust laws. They really should be called competition laws. And we need to have competition. Having a single or only two providers of internet service has forced Americans to spend hundreds of billions of dollars more than people do in other places, where in some cases there's real competition, in other places it's government monopoly run to have the most service at the lowest price, not the highest possible profit. So we do have to regulate business. And let's remember, we live in the second American Republic, the original American Republic. The Articles of Confederation failed because of two things. It couldn't tax. It was government by bake sale. And it had no power to regulate commerce. That's why we created our Constitution. And we need to recognize that we do need to regulate and try to get a level playing field. And we have a very unlevel playing field for big firms versus small ones.
Okay, Ken?
Not only that, but I think that even if the antitrust laws were being enforced, which they're not, they're still really tailored to manufacturing firms, I mean, to old industries. So we've got two problems. First, we've got laws that folks don't want to enforce. And then second, those laws are kind of poorly adapted for companies like Amazon.
Well, they were written in the industrial era.
Yeah, exactly. So we really need better enforcement, and we need new laws. And I don't know, I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk then about, if we agree that the game is sort of rotten, what you do about that. Here's what Governor Cuomo wrote in his op-ed about this. He writes, quote, Is it inflammatory that Amazon receives tax incentives? Yes, it is. In a better world, they would not. Let us strive for a nation that creates a better world where the federal tax code is fair and progressive, and states don't compete amongst each other for the businesses and wealth that is truly a national asset. But we live in the here and now. For today, let's do our best to see New York thrive and grow, end quote. That's Governor Cuomo admitting, is it inflammatory that Amazon receives tax incentives? Yes, and in a better world, they would not. Well, here is his former lieutenant governor and Bob Duffy, who is now, of course, the head of the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce, talking just a few days ago at a news conference about the reality of incentives. He defended the local Amazon deal package that was put together, of which he was a part, and he said this about incentives.
For people that criticize government spending and government investment, our area is very heavily dependent on investment by the public sector, more so than other regions around the country. So if you were to take away the governor's investment and the legislature over the last almost 8 years, I think it's between $1 and $1.6 billion in a variety of areas. You see that at universities, you see it with businesses, you see it downtown, you see it in outlying areas, that, and even this week, Bausch & Lomb is growing jobs, and a lot of that is thanks to a lot of work by New York State, Empire State Development, and the governor.
Okay, so let me ask then, if you agree with the premise, and if you do, does that sound like someone who wants to work actively to change a system? Kent?
Well, actively to change the system, I think there's an acquiescence on the part of elected officials, and our Bob Duffy is being a former elected official. I see that, and that comes out in the governor's piece too. Although I find myself actually when I read the governor's op-ed, I thought it was better than I expected, actually, and I thought that he did a pretty good job defending his position. So we can fault his assumptions.
I mean, there's nobody in the room telling him, you're making some good points, but you've got dripping condescension that just rolls off this piece.
Well, yeah, I get the point.
The socialists and extreme conservatives.
I know, but this is Andrew Cuomo.
I love the framing that I'm the one who sees clearly. I'm the pragmatist. Everyone else are idiots. I always like that framing in a piece.
Just keep in mind, Donald Trump's not the only guy who sees the world that way. Andy Cuomo does.
And by the way, if the governor ever came on this talk show, I'd say the same thing. Come on, man. Like you, everybody thinks they're the smart one in the room. But go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that relative to the, it was an aggressive and it was long, it was detailed.
It was thorough. Yeah, if you're going to defend the deal, defend the deal.
He defended the deal, and I don't disagree with any of your characterization of it, but I was expecting something a little more bureaucratic.
But when he says that it's inflammatory when companies like Amazon receive tax incentives, but that's the world we live in. This is not the mark of someone in the political world who's going to show the leadership to find a way to change that. He's going to play the game for as long as he's in office.
Yeah, he and every other governor in the country, I'm afraid.
Yes.
And probably every big city mayor.
I
mean, you could see Bill de Blasio saying much the same thing. You know, this is rare to see de Blasio and Cuomo actually, singing from the same hymn.
Absolutely. Go ahead, David.
And let me throw a little gasoline on the inflammatory comments. Last year, Amazon reported to shareholders $3 billion in profits, but it had overseas losses, so it made $5.6 billion in domestic profits. Its corporate income tax bill was zero, and it is now disclosed to shareholders that under the Trump tax law, it will get a $718 million tax gain this year. Bezos does not run his company on the basis we traditionally think of, which is that these are wealth-building devices where you earn profits, you reinvest part of the profits, you pay part of it out to your owners as they need. He has built a business that is based on this perception that by having such a giant share of the market and expanding more and more and more and more areas until there's an Amazon of economic activity, that the franchise itself is what's valuable, and you build the business by not paying state income taxes, which they got away with for years, state sales taxes, which they got away with for years, and then you design the model to have no taxable profits in the business.
And it is back to the point of, companies have gotten, particularly in it's a really strange business if you think about it. Amazon is a very odd business.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why our old antitrust laws just don't work very well.
But they squeeze everybody else. I mean, as an author, I make most of my money from selling books. On the same volume of books, I make less money today, and so does my publisher, because Amazon is taking the profits. And that's, by the way, an issue affecting deeply our economy. There's now some economic research about how firms which are able to collect what are called rents, which is economics for money you don't deserve, excess profits, they are holding back on the economy. They are damaging competitive markets. And, you want economic growth. What did Adam Smith tell us? You got to have competitive markets. And the internet and the laws that were written in the industrial age don't fit together very well. So you end up with these monopolies and near monopolies. And I'll give you one good example, the old hotel reservation business, because I started a little hotel management company with one of my sons. The travel agency got a 10% commission. I talked to a hotel owner recently who told me that he pays at peak season 40% to companies like Trivago and Expedia. 40%.
Wow. Yeah.
His profit margin isn't 40%. The real profits are in the digital firm booking the rooms. They're not in the hotel itself. That's not good.
No, it's it really is a terrifying period of time. I think over the next 10, 15 years, I really don't know where it's going to go. But, we're talking about solutions. I mean, I don't see the combination of understanding and willingness to confront the wealthy interests, willingness to take the political risk to change any of this. I think it's a very, very difficult time. And I really don't.
There's no public demand to change it.
Well, there's no public understanding of it,
yes,
for starters.
And there
right?
may be political risk if Governor Cuomo or Bill de Blasio in New York City actually stood up and said, we're going to be the city and the state that don't play the Amazon game. They might have been voted out of office. I doubt it, but it's possible. There may be a political risk to saying, you don't want Amazon, you don't want, so.
Well, and if they're successful, they may get another term.
Maybe so.
Exactly.
So on the question of what can be done, Mark Funkhauser is a former mayor of Kansas City, Missouri, and as we mentioned earlier, Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri have been fighting over these corporate headquarters and these tax breaks over a four-mile radius in terms of back and forth across the border. Planet Money did a good show on this. And Funkhauser now has been sort of leading this charge of calling for a national ban of this sort of corporate bribery. He says he envisions the law as a domestic version of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which would make it illegal for Americans to bribe foreign officials. Well, he says that should be applied in the same vein if it is domestic companies moving jobs within from state to state. He said essentially that should be viewed as a bribe. This isn't creation of new jobs. It's robbing Peter to pay Paul, and that's not going to happen anymore.
Well, yes, and would Amazon be exempt under that rule?
Why would Amazon be exempt?
Well, these are new jobs.
These are new jobs, yeah. I mean, this is not an easy solution. I mean, the solution that's never going to happen is, in Canada, the provinces are subordinate to the national government. We have federalism. States are equal to the national government, and that's why we have this problem. And
so what's going to happen? What can be done?
We're going to keep getting ripped off more and more by corporations.
Well, what's the solution?
At some point, the subsidies will get to be so bad that hopefully there'll be a public reaction. Right now, from the year 2010, research shows that subsidies came to $900 per family of four. That is more than an average week's gross pay for an American worker. $47,000 a year, $900 a week. So apparently the tolerance level of Americans is 1 week of pay a year, 2% of their income. They're willing to give to Jeff Bezos and General Electric and Rupert Murdoch and Mitsubishi and Nissan.
Let me make this more complicated, though. I mean, because, again, if you look at the Foxconn deal versus the Amazon deal, so much of our economic development incentives are not checks that we write and give to people and keep the corporations in terms of real cashable checks, right? What it is it's money we've agreed not to receive. And you see that in what Cuomo's saying in his op-ed, that what we're saying is that if you in fact bring this revenue, bring this payroll to our community. We agree not to receive the tax that you would have received had you had we not done the deal.
That they would have owed.
That's right. And so as long as the argument, as long as that but-for clause is satisfied, right, that but-for the incentive, this wouldn't have happened, we're not actually giving anything away, which is what Cuomo is, you know, arguing. And again, what's troubling is that, you know, we're frustrated about this Amazon deal, but this is actually, and particularly the way that the incentives are structured in New York, it's actually one of the cleaner incentive packages that we have seen. I mean, compared to Foxconn, it's pure straight up.
But the falsity in Cuomo's defense is a dollar you don't pay to the government is identical to a dollar the government pays to you. As an accounting matter, you treat it differently, but it's a dollar. And so when Amazon doesn't have to pay a dollar it otherwise would have had to pay, it's the same as our writing them a check for a dollar.
But otherwise would have been paying is the point. And if in fact Amazon didn't locate in Long Island City, then they wouldn't be.
Right. So on a state level, it may make sense. On a national level, these subsidies make us worse off. They may benefit a specific location. They may not. It depends on how the subsidy is designed, as with the Foxconn example or the really awful one down in Saratoga for Global Foundries, the microchip maker. But on a national level, if you look at it that way, on a global level, these subsidies are simply taking from the many to give to the already rich few, and they diminish us economically. But, you know, on a local level, it's a different story. And it's not that, you know, all subsidies are bad. Subsidizing, for example, grocery stores and teaching people how to eat healthier foods in food deserts, in poor neighborhoods, would save us money by reducing long-term healthcare costs, for example. So sometimes we do want to have subsidies. We certainly want to subsidize basic science. More than half the economic growth in this country since World War II is from taxpayer spending on basic science. And we want to subsidize education because the most valuable asset we have is gray matter in children that needs to be turned into rigorous, critically thinking machines in their heads as adults.
All right. Well, let me get a phone call from Sue in Pittsford who thinks that we're being petty. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi. I go to Saratoga every year, and it has been in the 90s, you couldn't give their real estate away. Today, you can't touch it. So much for Global Foundries. I mean, I don't know how much was paid and how much of the state is responsible for that, but it is one booming, fantastically booming area. And it has brought in a lot of other side businesses. But my problem with the conversation today is that people's tongues are hanging out for this deal in New York City. Their tongues are hanging out because it is a fantastic deal. As far as I'm concerned.
You think everyone's tongues are hanging out?
There's property down there that sat there for 40 years and was not developed. It is now going to be developed. There's infrastructure that is needed. There's no money to put into that infrastructure. Amazon is bringing all of the jobs, presumably, if these projections are correct. They are bringing all of these jobs in that will be paying income tax. So assuming they pay, for instance, $1 billion a year in income tax, what the state is giving them is reduction of that of 10%. We collect $900 million, and we can pay for the infrastructure.
Okay.
We can put the money towards, and over 10 years, I mean, that's where they're getting all of this $1 billion to $5 billion. I mean, it's probably not much more than $2 billion over 10 years. And to me, that's a good deal. I'll forego 1%.
Yeah, combined city and state, it's about $3 billion, but okay.
I'll forego 1% of the income tax to collect 9%. That wasn't going to be there unless we had this deal.
All right.
So as far as I'm concerned, I think the conversation regarding this deal is petty. Regarding the larger issue, have at it.
Okay. Sue, thank you. Kent?
Well, I think, as I've said, I think this is one of the cleaner of these deals that I've seen. And I do think that the but-for condition is probably satisfied here, in which case we are looking at a lot of jobs and the incentives are performance-based. So, you know, most of the incentives don't come without the job creation occurring.
This is not a Foxconn.
This is not a Foxconn. The other thing, and as David pointed out, the money that we're putting into infrastructure is desperately needed in that part of New York City. New York City is an engine for growth for the state. You know, the other point you made is that it will reduce our dependence on Wall Street, which is also desperately needed. The state is way too dependent on Wall Street income. So there's a lot of wonderful things coming out of this. I think that the problem I have is not this deal, but it is the setup that we get for all this kind of corporate welfare across the country. So I'm not troubled by this one. I'm troubled by the precedent it sets for others.
Yeah, I agree with Kent, and I think this is a classic example of where there's a conflict between principles and practicality, and the design of our Constitution.
You want to elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, the principle is we shouldn't be subsidizing corporations. It's in our state constitution. We're not supposed to be doing that. It's bad economics generally to do that. And yet, as a practical matter, this is a good deal in many ways, and it is a better deal by far than Foxconn, than the Saratoga Springs deal, and many others.
You were refilling your water when Sue was defending Saratoga Springs deal. She said you've got it wrong, that she doesn't know the particulars of the deal, but things are booming there.
Well, I know a little bit more about that because I was living in Saratoga Springs before Global Foundries got started, and Saratoga was already on the way up. I mean, it was real estate was soaring in 1990 when I lived in Saratoga Springs. So I don't think that the Saratoga Springs revival really has anything to do with Global Foundries. That said, the Global Foundries deal has had tremendous spinoffs. It was a really expensive deal. But at the same time, I believe that that the benefits from that were actually pretty good. So I think that the spillover from the whole Albany Nano investment, was very positive. The most significant negative coming off of the Albany Nano initiative was the conviction of our governors that you could do it again. And so that's where we saw the Infotonics Center in Farmington, which was a great debacle. This is where we had the Film Hub in Syracuse, which is a debacle. That's where we've got Solar City in Buffalo. That is probably going to be a debacle. We just don't know yet. And the Solar City thing. I mean, talk about a bad deal. You know, the state of New York, as taxpayers, we now put $750 million into building a plant for somebody else. And if it's a big gamble, as Elon Musk loves gambles, and some of his gambles aren't going to pay off, and we're going to end up owning a solar cell manufacturing facility in Buffalo.
Hmm. You want to add on Saratoga?
No, my problem with the Saratoga deal is it's so the state Supreme Court, our high, not Supreme Court, our Court of Appeals, was presented with the question, can taxpayers bring a case challenging what is a clear violation, the court acknowledged, of our state constitution? And the position taken by our Solicitor General, Barbara Underwood, who's now the Attorney General, is no, you have no standing. You may not bring this case before the courts. And the precedent at its set is, hey, tough luck. The doors are open for giveaways to corporations. And that's the deeper problem with that. And, of course, again, why are we giving $1.4 billion to a man who owns a country in the Middle East?
Well, that wasn't the original deal, David, in fairness. The original deal at Global Foundries was with AMD before Global Foundries was founded, before.
Right. I understand.
So it's just you're characterizing things perhaps in a somewhat more inflammatory way than is necessary.
I absolutely agree.
Okay. Mark wants to know if Evan, do your guests at least agree that taxpayers now deserve to know what their own communities bid to Amazon, especially if Amazon chose the two obvious choices and we all feel silly in retrospect? Shouldn't we at least know what the offer was? David K. Johnston, does Western New York deserve to know what the bid was?
Yeah, that presents a problem because once you put out that data, you're basically signaling to the market a transparency that works against you as a taxpayer and in favor of people who want subsidies. You know, it would be interesting for you to have a show with Richard Glazier. He's a stockbroker in town who has a blog, and he's been writing about local investment. And one of the things I've learned from that is that there are a number of startups and small companies here that have located here not because of subsidies. Some of them haven't even sought them, but because of the labor force. And we know that having the labor force you need locally has a big impact. That's why we refer to Madison Avenue, and we used to talk about Fleet Street, where newspapers were in London. And we have a superb labor force, and we have, especially at RIT, a university turning out a technical, highly skilled labor force. But I don't want to give away what the limits are of how far our local governments are willing to go in terms of giveaways to attract businesses.
Mr. Transparency, you're standing on Bob Duffy's side saying we can't reveal the deal?
Well, remember how David phrased that, though. Yeah. He's pointing out that it's contrary to the interests of taxpayers.
It does. Okay, so what you're saying is this actually protects taxpayers not disclosing the deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, That's a way better way of phrasing the argument.
All of this is gray area. There's no black and white in these issues, Evan. It's all shades of gray.
The other thing about revealing the details of the deal is that I don't know really how relevant it is. I mean, this is such a big, fat, unusual thing that I don't know that what anyone was offering, you know, suggests that they'll be willing to offer that to someone else. I mean, it's just, this is really a one-off. We're not going to see another one of these.
Yes, that's why when, you know, and, you know, Bob Duffy's going to be on this program tomorrow talking about a totally different issue, and I respect that, and I respect him and the team that put together this offer. But when they said, we got to protect competitive, you know, it's anti-competitive to us to reveal the nature of our deal. Well, we know what a lot of these bids look like in other markets. And Kent's right. There's not another Amazon showing up tomorrow. So when the next company calls and says, hey, I want that deal, it's not quite the same thing. I'm more of a transparency fan. I do think David K. Johnston's argument in favor of protecting taxpayers by not giving it up is an interesting counterpoint. So thanks for the email from Mark. Let me read Andrew's email. And Andrew makes a comparison that I think is interesting. He is comparing the way governments use subsidy in the same way that the world has seen a nuclear arms race, in that we want a world with no nuclear arms. That way there's no risk of nuclear weapons being detonated. But once one nation has nuclear weapons and another feels compelled to get them for, you know, sort of competitive and safety and whatever, that you see this race happening. And he says, this whole process feels like that. Every city has to keep one-upping each other, and it isn't good for any of the cities, only good for Amazon. Yet once the race gets started, it's hard to stop. Yet all the cities would be better off without competing on incentives, just like the planet would be better off when we have fewer nukes. Do your panelists have ideas on how to prevent a self-destructive arms race? So again, Andrew, what we've been talking about for the last 25 minutes is there isn't an easy answer here. That at least with this system of government and the system of economics, you're going, I don't see a way out of this.
No, I think this will continue to become more sophisticated and more difficult. The whole subsidy thing grew out of, after World War II, the Eisenhower freeway system, the interstate freeway system, which has made us fabulously wealthier and made it easier to move goods, and which we need to maintain for the economic health of the country. But some smart guys took a look at this and said, oh, the problem in the South where there's no rail infrastructure, no highway infrastructure, we can't have large investments in factories, we can now address that if we get highways and we have a cheaper labor force. Now, time has passed that idea by, but other people took this idea and they grew it, and they were entrepreneurial about how to mine the public treasury.
Okay. Kent?
Well, this is, you know, I think that there's, you know, just not a whole lot that we're going to be able to do near term about this. I think we have to recognize that that economic development is a real a challenge. We sit in a place, as David points out, we've got this very attractive workforce. You know, if you take a look at the number of STEM degrees per year coming out of Rochester's colleges and universities on a per capita basis among the top 100 metros, we're number one. Actually, the top of the list of you know, science, technology, engineering, math degrees granted every year. So that's, you know, we've got a great labor force. There are other places that don't have our assets, and You know, if you don't have the kind of labor force we have, you know, you can see where the desire to use incentives is going to be really quite potent. One other point I want to make, though, is that, you know, when we work, if you look at states where the state controls the incentive, at least you're in that situation. You don't have competitive incentives city to city. We do have that in New York. We've got a lot of competition where there's a, you know, trying to move from Utica to Elmira, or from Buffalo to Rochester.
Or from Rochester to the suburbs at one time.
Or from Rochester to the suburbs, absolutely. And we saw it in Ohio where the Columbus suburbs are competing with one another all the time. If the incentives moved up to the state level, and that is a decision each state could make, that would at least limit the competitive deal. State, you know, city by city.
All right, last question, and I'll direct it to David K. Johnston. George in Greece called. I don't have time to take the call, but he said someone needs to discuss what the impact is on total employment when it comes to Amazon jobs. And when we look at recent studies, Nathan Jensen was an economist at George Washington University, and every deal is different, every scenario is different. I think we had to be careful with saying this would be true everywhere. But he says these incentives in big incentive deals like this have very little discernible impact on firm expansion and local employment measured by job creation. He says companies often decide where they want to go and then find ways to get to their dream city or hometown to pay them to do what they were going to do anyway.
That's a correct analysis, but in this, in general, but in this particular deal, notice that Amazon is going to two urban centers that are relatively flat topography. It didn't go to Pittsburgh. It doesn't want to repeat the problems it has in Seattle with they messed up transportation. And this will lead to other jobs and to investments in transportation infrastructure, which New York City desperately needs.
Okay. Online, David, your work at DC Report is where, sir?
DCReport.org. We have a bunch of volunteer journalists who were former senior editors at the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times. And we cover what the Trump administration does, not what the president tweets. DCReport.org.
Report on what they do, less on what they say, is a lesson David K. Johnston taught me years ago. Thanks for being here, David.
Thank you.
Kent Gardner, RochesterBeacon.com.
That's right.
If you want to see more of the new Rochester Beacon, Kent's the opinion editor there. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, short break. More connections coming up.